Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom rozszerzony. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od pierwszego do trzeciego. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie pierwsze. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One.
The next edition of our programme features the unusual tale of dinosaur hunters Edward Cope and Othniel Marsh and their legendary dispute set in America's Wild West in the late 1800s. This is a tale of corruption, bribery and sabotage by two paleontologists who would stop at nothing in their race to find new dinosaur fossils. No doubt their bitter war led to the discovery of some of our most iconic dinosaur species. But what made these two seemingly respectable men of science behave in such an improper way? And what was the outcome of this now infamous battle? Join us on May the 11th to find out what Tracy Logan has discovered on the subject.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
One.
The next edition of our programme features the unusual tale of dinosaur hunters Edward Cope and Othniel Marsh and their legendary dispute set in America's Wild West in the late 1800s. This is a tale of corruption, bribery and sabotage by two paleontologists who would stop at nothing in their race to find new dinosaur fossils. No doubt their bitter war led to the discovery of some of our most iconic dinosaur species. But what made these two seemingly respectable men of science behave in such an improper way? And what was the outcome of this now infamous battle? Join us on May the 11th to find out what Tracy Logan has discovered on the subject.
Two. I recently booked tickets through budgetair.com for myself and a friend to fly to Shanghai. When I checked the e-tickets a couple of days later, I realized that I had added an extra letter to my friend's surname. Budgetair said that to correct it, I needed to cancel the ticket and buy a new one, which would cost £230. I thought it was too much to pay, so I contacted the airline. There I was informed that they would have changed the name free of charge if I had booked through them directly. But since I used budgetair.com, only the latter could cancel the ticket. I'd like to tell everybody not to use budgetair.com.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
2. I recently booked tickets through budgetair.com for myself and a friend to fly to Shanghai. When I checked the e-tickets a couple of days later, I realized that I had added an extra letter to my friend's surname. Budgetair said that to correct it, I needed to cancel the ticket and buy a new one, which would cost £230. I thought it was too much to pay, so I contacted the airline. There I was informed that they would have changed the name free of charge if I had booked through them directly. But since I used budgetair.com, only the latter could cancel the ticket. I'd like to tell everybody not to use budgetair.com. Three. Hey, look what I found in the attic.
An old map. Oh, I see my street here. And
Hold on, there's no such thing as Baker Street in our city. It's a mistake.
Ha! It's not. That's why I wanted to show you the map. It's something called a trap street.
A trap street?
Yes, it's a fictional street created by mapmakers. Producing maps used to be an extremely demanding process. Map companies wanted to protect their work from others, and so they started to use map traps. If someone produced another map with the same fake street, they could be proven guilty of breaching copyright.
Wow!
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
3. Hey, look what I found in the attic.
An old map. Oh, I see my street here. And, hold on, there's no such thing as Baker Street in our city. It's a mistake.
Ha, it's not. That's why I wanted to show you the map. It's something called a trap street.
A trap street?
Yes, it's a fictional street created by mapmakers. Producing maps used to be an extremely demanding process. Map companies wanted to protect their work from others, and so they started to use map traps. If someone produced another map with the same fake street, they could be proven guilty of breaching copyright.
Wow!
Zadanie drugie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One.
Once, when I was second cellist, our conductor fell ill just before the concert. The manager of the hall asked if anybody could conduct the evening's program. He was delighted when I agreed to try. I knew all the works. At the end of the concert, the orchestra was pleased, the manager was relieved, and everybody kept asking me to conduct for the next 3 weeks while the maestro recovered in hospital. When the maestro was back on the podium, I took my customary seat next to the violins. Sam, the principal violinist, leaned over to me and asked, "Where the hell have you been for the last 3 weeks?"
Two. A few years ago, I went to a New Year's Eve concert in Washington. I was sitting in the middle of the auditorium, and right at that magic moment after the end of a particularly moving performance by the cellos, with the maestro standing motionless, when everybody was just about to clap their hands, a loud ring came out of my pocket. It seemed to go on forever. People looked at me scornfully. Nobody applauded, but they all waited for me to turn the phone off. Then came the applause. Well, I work at the hospital and I have to be available at all times, but I could have put my mobile into silent mode. I just forgot. I was so ashamed that I left during the next break. Three.
I'm a conductor, but I'd like to work as a composer. Recently, I spent a month in hospital. There, I decided to prepare for an audition at the Chicago Philharmonic Orchestra, which was offering the combined position of conductor and composer. Staying in hospital, I composed a heartbreaking symphonic piece inspired by the dramatic stories I had heard from the patients. Once I sent it to Chicago, I was informed that the piece was supposed to be for mouth organ and cello. I never noticed that in the job advertisement. Naturally, I kept the piece, but had to write something new for the audition.
4. When I started to work with the musicians of the New York Philharmonic, I decided to give them some background to the pieces we were going to play. During rehearsals, I talked extensively about the philosophical significance of Beethoven's masterpieces and the fact that he wrote the works when he was seriously ill. I thought that such information was crucial for a better understanding of his musical line and tempo. But I noticed that some of the musicians were getting restless. Then a cellist came up to me during a break and said, "Maestro, you talk too much." I got the point.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
1.
Once, when I was second cellist, our conductor fell ill just before the concert. The manager of the hall asked if anybody could conduct the evening's program. He was delighted when I agreed to try. I knew all the works. At the end of the concert, the orchestra was pleased, the manager was relieved, and everybody kept asking me to conduct for the next 3 weeks while the maestro recovered in hospital. When the maestro was back on the podium, I took my customary seat next to the violins. Sam, the principal violinist, leaned over to me and asked, "Where the hell have you been for the last 3 weeks?"
Two. A few years ago, I went to a New Year's Eve concert in Washington. I was sitting in the middle of the auditorium, and right at that magic moment after the end of a particularly moving performance by the cellos, with the maestro standing motionless, when everybody was just about to clap their hands, a loud ring came out of my pocket. It seemed to go on forever. People looked at me scornfully. Nobody applauded, but they all waited for me to turn the phone off. Then came the applause. Well, I work at the hospital and I have to be available at all times, but I could have put my mobile into silent mode. I just forgot. I was so ashamed that I left during the next break. Three.
I'm a conductor, but I'd like to work as a composer. Recently, I spent a month in hospital. There, I decided to prepare for an audition at the Chicago Philharmonic Orchestra, which was offering the combined position of conductor and composer. Staying in hospital, I composed a heartbreaking symphonic piece inspired by the dramatic stories I had heard from the patients. Once I sent it to Chicago, I was informed that the piece was supposed to be for mouth organ and cello. I never noticed that in the job advertisement. Naturally, I kept the piece, but had to write something new for the audition.
Four. When I started to work with the musicians of the New York Philharmonic, I decided to give them some background to the pieces we were going to play. During rehearsals, I talked extensively about the philosophical significance of Beethoven's masterpieces and the fact that he wrote the works when he was seriously ill. I thought that such information was crucial for a better understanding of his musical line and tempo. But I noticed that some of the musicians were getting restless. Then a cellist came up to me during a break and said, "Maestro, you talk too much." I got the point.
Zadanie trzecie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Today we're talking to a Peace Corps volunteer in Africa, Matson Contado. Matson, what led you to pursue this unique experience?
I was raised in central Minnesota. After high school, I left to study mechanical engineering. The first time I thought about joining the Peace Corps was when I saw an advertisement for it on a bus. The slogan said, "Life is calling. How far will you go?" The idea seemed attractive, but I didn't think there was a place for engineers, or basically anyone that wasn't a nurse or a teacher, so I forgot about it. But then one day, I was explaining to a friend of mine who conducts job interviews that I wasn't happy with my current career path. She said that our country's economy was taking a dive and suggested checking out the Peace Corps. I tried to find another job for a while, but prospects looked so grim that I decided to take the chance and apply.
The Peace Corps application process is notorious for being lengthy and difficult. Was this true for you?
It is indeed a trying experience. They say that if you have the stamina to make it through, you've shown the commitment needed to persevere as a Peace Corps volunteer. I was one of the lucky ones. Miraculously, it took me only 6 months from my initial application to being offered a post. It's usually 9 to 12 months, and even longer for married couples and those who request a particular location. I didn't. For me, Africa was just a streak of luck, and I'm glad I was sent here.
How did your family react when they learned you would be gone for 2 years?
I'd lived in Spain during my junior year of high school and had gone to university far away from home, so it didn't come to them as a surprise. They treated my choice as something natural. My uncle was a Peace Corps volunteer in the 1970s, so my mother had some idea of what it would be like. She was a little worried because she remembered how rarely she had heard from her brother while he was away from home. But nowadays, with email, the internet, and mobile phones, it's completely different, so she didn't find it difficult to let me go.
How have your views about Africa changed?
I remember how I used to imagine rural Africa. Some stereotypes are true, but most of them aren't. I live in a small, brick-and-mud house. I fetch my own water from a well and use a homemade shower. The accommodation is fairly basic, but I have electricity and internet access. There are no lions or cheetahs leaping through my backyard. I've seen some wild baboons several times outside the village, but I see donkeys and other farm animals more often. What really took me by surprise is the contrast between village life and urban life. How close they are geographically, yet how different they are socially and economically. I travel 2 hours by minibus to the nearest town, and it has all the modern conveniences: running water, paved streets, and shopping plazas. Amazing!
What's next for you after you complete your Peace Corps service?
I'll have to think about it. I prefer to take life as it is, one step at a time.
Thank you, Matson.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Today we're talking to a Peace Corps volunteer in Africa, Matson Contado. Matson, what led you to pursue this unique experience?
I was raised in central Minnesota. After high school, I left to study mechanical engineering. The first time I thought about joining the Peace Corps was when I saw an advertisement for it on a bus. The slogan said, "Life is calling. How far will you go?" The idea seemed attractive, but I didn't think there was a place for engineers, or basically anyone that wasn't a nurse or a teacher, so I forgot about it. But then one day, I was explaining to a friend of mine who conducts job interviews that I wasn't happy with my current career path. She said that our country's economy was taking a dive and suggested checking out the Peace Corps. I tried to find another job for a while, but prospects looked so grim that I decided to take the chance and apply.
The Peace Corps application process is notorious for being lengthy and difficult. Was this true for you?
It is indeed a trying experience. They say that if you have the stamina to make it through, you've shown the commitment needed to persevere as a Peace Corps volunteer. I was one of the lucky ones. Miraculously, it took me only 6 months from my initial application to being offered a post. It's usually 9 to 12 months, and even longer for married couples and those who request a particular location. I didn't. For me, Africa was just a streak of luck, and I'm glad I was sent here.
How did your family react when they learned you would be gone for 2 years?
I'd lived in Spain during my junior year of high school and had gone to university far away from home, so it didn't come to them as a surprise. They treated my choice as something natural. My uncle was a Peace Corps volunteer in the 1970s, so my mother had some idea of what it would be like. She was a little worried because she remembered how rarely she had heard from her brother while he was away from home. But nowadays, with email, the internet, and mobile phones, it's completely different, so she didn't find it difficult to let me go.
How have your views about Africa changed?
I remember how I used to imagine rural Africa. Some stereotypes are true, but most of them aren't. I live in a small brick-and-mud house. I fetch my own water from a well and use a homemade shower. The accommodation is fairly basic, but I have electricity and internet access. There are no lions or cheetahs leaping through my backyard. I've seen some wild baboons several times outside the village, but I see donkeys and other farm animals more often. What really took me by surprise is the contrast between village life and urban life. How close they are geographically, yet how different they are socially and economically. I travel 2 hours by minibus to the nearest town, and it has all the modern conveniences: running water, paved streets, and shopping plazas. Amazing!
What's next for you after you complete your Peace Corps service?
I'll have to think about it. I prefer to take life as it is, one step at a time.
Thank you, Matson.
Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.